calling Senate Labor and Commerce to order. It is April 19th and 1:40. Senator Davis and myself are here. Currently, the rest of the members will been temporarily delayed. We'll be here shortly, but we do have a number of folks off net waiting to testify, so I wanted to move forward with their comments. We'll go first to the Board of Veterinary Examiners, and Dr. Bowser is in Soldotna. Are you with us, Dr. Bowser?
Yes, I am.
Do you have any opening comments you'd like to make?
Well, I just would say that I've enjoyed being on the board the last couple of years and am certainly willing to continue to serve.
Well, we appreciate your willingness to contribute to public service. We'll go to Anchorage then, and Dr. Trout.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, good afternoon, Dr. Trout. Just to see if you had any comments you'd like to make about your service with the Board of Veterinary Examiners.
No, I'm just looking forward to getting on there and helping out.
Okay. Appreciate that. And off now to Trappers Creek. Dr. Agree?
And I'm in Trapper Creek, and I'm looking forward to being on the board. I've been on a lot of commissions and boards, and I'm very proud that the governor chose me.
Well, again, to all three of you, thanks on the committee's behalf for your willingness to be give something back and be involved in public service. I see no questions from the committee for you at this time. So, again, we thank you for your willingness to serve and to be available for testimony. We'll move now to the State Board of Public Accountancy, and in the Anchorage LIO, Carla Basler, please.
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Hi, Carla, would you care to make a statement?
Actually, I'm just honored to be able to serve for my profession in the state of Alaska.
Well, with our financial challenges, we're always interested in accountants being able to help us out. I understand that Kenneth Mayer from Kenai is unavailable. He's involved in an audit today. But also in Anchorage is Christy Moore, or Morse, I believe it is.
Yes, this is Christy Morse.
Yes, and would you care to make a comment?
No, I just welcome this opportunity to be of service.
All right, well, and again, my thanks to you all for being willing to contribute your time to Alaska. That takes us to the State Board of Registration for Architects, Engineers, and Land Surveyors at the LIO in Fairbanks. Mr. Hiron, is it?
Correct, Richard Hiron.
Yes.
And I feel an obligation for service to the state as, that has provided such a beneficial and successful life for me, and I'd like to repay that with service to the state and to my profession.
Thank you. Also, in the LIO in Anchorage, I'm sorry, we have a question for Mr. Hiron.
Yes, I do.
Go ahead, Senator Davis.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that you had checked yes on one of the questions. It was, could you or any member of your family be affected financially by decisions to be made by this board? Could you explain that?
Well, I was trying to be honest, I would say. Anything that I do in the profession that licenses deal with that I'm working in would have an effect on my economics. I was trying to be honest, I guess.
So there wasn't any particular thing that you were referring to. You were just saying just by being on the board, it might increase your visibility, so your business might increase, or what?
I hadn't thought it that far along, but yes, visibility probably would have an effect on my business.
Thank you very much.
And for the record, Senator Ellis and Seekins have joined us. And just for the record, Mr. Hiron, there's no specific project that would lead to financial gain for you from being on the board, simply that this perhaps increases your credibility. Is that accurate?
Yes, that's accurate. I answered it too literally, probably. I was trying to be honest.
Well, we don't want to discourage honesty. Sometimes it's not as common as we'd like it to be. So we appreciate that. Thank you. Now moving to Anchorage, Mr. Hightower.
Yes, thank you. I've enjoyed being involved in the public process, and I've done that through serving on many boards and commissions, and I appreciate the opportunity that the governor's given me to serve on this board.
Thank you. I see no questions. For the record, Senator Stevens has joined us. And here in Juneau, Mr. Morris. Yes, please. If you'd just identify yourself for the record, please.
Afternoon. My name is Mark Morris, and like the others before me, I'm very honored that the governor would select me to serve on the board. And I'm a lifelong Alaskan, and engineering has been good to me as a profession, and so I would like to give back to my state and my profession.
Thank you very much. And to all of you, our thanks for your willingness to be able to, as you say, give back to your state. In Wasilla, for the Board of Barbers and Hairdressers, hairdressers, Ms. Massey?
Yes.
Good afternoon, and would you care to make a statement?
Just that I am too honored that the governor appointed me to this board, and I have been a professional in this state for many years, and hope that I can bring some knowledge and professional advice to help, aid, and carry on business.
And we thank you. I see no questions. Moving to the Labor Relations Agency in Fairbanks at the LIO, Gary Atwood, please.
Hello, this is Gary.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. Would you care to make a statement?
About all I can say is that I've got time to contribute, and I was talked about this by Randy Frank, who I thought was going to serve, but then I guess he's resigned from the board effective May 1st, and I was looking forward to working with him on the labor side, but I still have time to contribute whether he's there or not, and hopefully you'll pick up another labor member down the road here somewhere. But I'm retired, do have some time, and I've got a lot of experience in this area, so could be interesting.
I'm sure it's always interesting, but like our job here, it's not always fun. So
that's not unusual.
All right. Well, we thank you for your willingness to serve. Aaron Isaacs is traveling and unavailable for a call-in, but we also have in Ketchikan, Colleen Scanlon.
Hello. Hi, this is Colleen Scanlon, and this is a reappointment for me. I've been serving on the labor board in a management position now for 2 years, and I'm looking forward to another term and glad that I have been able to serve our government for the last 2 years.
Well, thank you. And Colleen, I think we may have talked to you a couple of years ago. Are you with the McDonald's Corporation?
No. Actually, I was with my family business. I worked in a family business for 13 years, Scanlon Art Gallery or Scanlon Incorporated. But they have since my parents have retired and closed the business, and so I'm kind of in transition right now.
Okay, thank you. I had confused you with someone else.
That's okay.
And my thanks to you and to Gary for your willingness to serve. That will take care of our confirmation hearings. We will move your names forward to the joint session. This doesn't reflect an intention by any member to vote for or against you in a future session, but that we have reviewed your appointment and would like to forward it to consideration by the body. And with that, could we have a motion to move these appointments forward?
Mr. Chairman,
I would
move to forward the list of appointments to the entire Senate body for consideration.
And without objection, we indeed will move these forward. That brings us now to Senate Bill 81, and we have heard this bill previously. We do have a new CS, and do we have someone from the bill sponsor here to address the CS?
Yes, Representative Anderson is in another committee right now. I'm in staff.
If you'd join us, please. And rather than an amendment, we have a CS before us. For discussion purposes, I would move the CS to House Bill 81, Labor and Commerce. It's / Lima, dated 4-18-05, and object for explanation. And if you could tell us about the CS, please. Identify yourself for the record.
My name is Eugene Harnett. I'm staff A to Representative Tom Anderson. I'm going to have to defer my comments to John Bitney.
Okay. Well, that would be fine. Mr. Bitney?
Mr. Chairman, my name is John Bitney. I'm under contract and registered as a lobbyist for the Alaska Home Builders Association. My efforts over the last couple of days have been to work with the sponsor's office to address some of the issues that came up at the public hearing here. The only change that is in the CS can be found on page 5, line 6. This exemption has been more, if you will, broadly crafted here in the CS than it was as the bill was originally over. The exemption in the bill as it came over from the House required occupancy by the person who is acting as their own contractor here under the exemption, and that the occupancy language has been completely removed here in the CS. The new language says that the person who acts as their own contractor is limited to building their own home, well, not their own home, but building a building up to a fourplex every 2 years as opposed to the current one-year limitation. That is the only change in the CS, Mr. Chairman.
Questions for Mr. Bitney? I remove my objection. If there aren't any further objections, we'll adopt the CS. I have to admit, I think I've had as much correspondence about this bill as any we've seen this year. Some folks addressing some concerns that I think probably will be best addressed in the Judiciary Committee, and I see it's headed there next. So with that in mind, I would entertain a motion to pass the burden.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Senate CS for House Bill Number 81 to my committee.
Jane?
Senator Stevens?
With pleasure. Yes.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Pekin?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Absolutely.
Senator Bundy?
Oh, so happy to agree.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, we've moved House Bill 81 on.
Did I do that okay, Mr. Chairman?
We did well. That brings us to Senate Bill 169, a workers' comp record bill. And this is a bill from Senator Terrio. Do we have a Terrio-type person?
He's standing right there.
Mr. Balash. Senator Terrio.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Senate Bill 169 is intended to to close a loophole in our privacy statutes with regards to information that is collected by our workers' compensation system. Currently, the workers' compensation system makes it illegal for an attorney or somebody to contact an injured worker to solicit business with regards to representing that person in the system. However, the language is not clear, does not make it really very clear that the state agencies have the power to withhold certain requests for information from the system that can be used to make those solicitations. The bill is not intended to prohibit disclosure of public record information regarding the specific claim to a newspaper reporter or an insurer seeking names of employers who are uninsured for purposes of soliciting contracts to provide the workers' comp insurance, just to prevent the person's individual information from being solicited or sold, so that they're then subject to getting calls from solicitors. I believe each of you have a copy of a letter that was written by an injured worker here in the state of Alaska who was contacted by an out-of-state attorney's firm that had received information about his claim under workers' comp, had questions for him about the type of injury he had sustained, how severe it was, and after conversing a bit, the outside solicitor indicated that he probably couldn't help him. And this individual Alaskan took that to mean that his claim was not of such a magnitude that that much money would be come of the result of the work. So I think this is just a clear case of the type of activity that we don't want to see happen. And if we want to prevent that from happening, we need to make it very clear in the statutes that the state agency, and specifically the workers' comp system, can refuse to disperse information that would be used by these outside sources. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I'm here to answer questions if you have them.
Questions for Senator Terry?
Chairman, if I could.
Yes.
At this time, I'd like to add an amendment to this bill. Propose an amendment that we add an immediate effective date.
Senator Terry?
That sounds fine to me.
A conceptual amendment number
conceptual
one.
Amendment.
Would you like to move that?
I'd move conceptual amendment number one to add an immediate effective date to the bill.
Any discussion? Any objection? Hearing none, we will see that the drafters do that. This, I hate to say it, but that this is a simple form of workers' comp. And because I think it is fairly clear and the members are informed as to the issues involved here, we can change the standing rule and address this and move it from committee with one hearing. Senator Seekins.
Chairman, I'd move Senate Bill number 169 as amended from committee with individual recommendations in the attached fiscal note.
Okay.
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Seekins?
Yes.
Senator Ellis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes. Yes. And with so we have moved 169 from committee. I know there were some folks who would have liked to have testified off net. However, some of our members are going to have to leave here shortly. So if they'd like to submit written testimony, I will see that it's added to the bill's record. That brings us to Senate Bill 168, Property and Casualty Insurance Regulations, and well, you could have Mr. Green cut cards to see who wants to testify. We'll stand at ease until we... Identify yourself for the record, please.
My name is Sarah McNair-Grove, and I'm the property casualty actuary with the Division of Insurance. and the director would hope to be here soon. She is in another hearing, actually, on the same bill in the House side. Last year, during some hearings on an insurance bill, the director was asked to work with a group of industry representatives to make some changes to the way we review and approve rate and form filings submitted by insurers to the division. And we did do that. We got together with several members of the industry over the summer and worked very hard to come up with the draft that you have before you. I guess the primary change from our current process is that we are moving some types of rate filings and some types of form filings away from requiring the division to approve them before an insurer can use them. We still have the same statutory requirements that rates not be inadequate, excessive, or unfairly discriminatory. We're not removing those kinds of consumer protections. We're just changing the process to make it hopefully a little bit easier for both the division and for the insurers to get new products onto the market quicker. So.
And with that, you would consider this a housekeeping measure?
It's a little bit more than housekeeping measures because it does make some significant changes to the way we do things.
Yeah, yet the division supports
yes, we
the
do.
Legislation. Questions? This, again, seems like a relatively innocuous bill. Senator Davis, if you're comfortable with us moving the bill today, I would entertain a motion.
Well, I'll give you a motion.
All right. Senate Bill 168 has been moved from committee. Jane, would you take the roll, please?
Senator Davis?
Yes.
Senator Stevens?
Yes.
Senator Thomas?
Yes. Thank you. 168 is on its way. That will bring us to 165, card rooms and operations. Hey, you're not going to bill them for the time you were in the hall, are you?
Pardon me?
You're not going to... We'll stand at ease. Senate Bill 165, Card Rooms and Operations. Senator Cowdery is with us. Senator Cowdery, would you like to present your bill?
I'll have my staff do that.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Ryan McKinster. I'm staff to Senator John Cowdery. Senate Bill 165 basically is allowing card rooms to exist with specific regulations regarding those card rooms. One of the specific regulations for the card rooms is that the only non-banked games can be played. Currently, non-banked games are such as poker, rummy, other games are currently allowed to be played at home amongst friends. All this bill does is allow them to be played in a controlled public environment with the same rules in place that you can play at home. As many of you may know, there's a growing popularity for games such as this, and that popularity doesn't seem to be waning. Unfortunately, with that popularity to some extent, there is the continuing of these games, and some of the underground games are becoming more popular, but with that, some issues go hand in hand. Crime with underground games is inherent because you're dealing with criminals because it's an underground game. In a public legal environment, this issue is not as much to be addressed because you're having people that are regulated by the state following the games closely. In addition, there's some barriers to entry that we assume are profitable to the state. $10,000 per table with a $25,000 application fee, and that $10,000 per table is a yearly fee. It's not prorated, so you come away halfway through the year, you're paying that full $10,000. January 1st, you're paying $10,000 again. This bill also addresses people that can and can't hold a license and limits the number of licenses to 1 per 30,000 of population. For Anchorage, obviously, that could be up to about 8,000 or 8 card rooms, depending on how if you look at the census, if you look at the 2000 census. And smaller communities obviously would be left out, but that is something that can be addressed. Like I said, currently this is allowed to play at home, so this isn't necessarily expansion of gaming per se. These are games are allowed at home, and basically we're just saying in a controlled environment, limited environment, you can play in a public venue that is regulated by the state for revenue and for criminal activity.
Just for the record, because I think some people don't understand, I've received communications from them. It is legal to play cards, to gamble with cards, to gamble for money currently in Alaska as long as the house, whoever's holding the game, doesn't take a rake or take some of the money that's being gambled in form of overhead operating costs. That's correct, isn't it?
Yes, Senator Bundy, that is correct. The rake, the rental fee, would be something you can't currently take that is disallowed, this bill would allow. The clarification needs to be made, though. There's a difference between a rake and actually the house having a stake in the game. You're not playing odds against the house like you would with blackjack. The odds are even for everybody at the table, and they're physically playing against each other instead of the house. Basically, it's just a rental fee for the table, or otherwise known as a rake.
And so the significant change that this bill would make is that I read something in paper in Matt Valley, they're having tournaments for T-shirts and bragging rights and that sort of thing. The significant change this would make would be allow someone who has organized the game to charge, basically, as you said, I think, the table rental.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the major difference between this and current law.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, that is the major difference. And to go a little farther with that, some of the other games are currently happening that are on the edge right now, because there's not any money involved up front, are actually more than T-shirts and things. There's actually valuable prizes or somewhat valuable prizes being given away. So it's a very similar thing along the lines. It's just that there's no initial input into the game.
And I feel like I express a conflict. I do play poker, maybe not very well, but I do play once in a while. The chair will note that judgment call from Senator Davis. I've followed the issue somewhat nationally and the interest in other states and growing interest in tournaments. Would this bill focus on or would allow the tournaments that seem to be so popular because of the television coverage?
Mr. Chair, this bill right now doesn't specifically deal with tournaments except for the idea of charity tournaments. Quarterly, there's a requirement that the establishment hold a charity tournament to benefit education, nonprofit education, some type of group, a scholarship, one of the universities, something along those lines. Estimates range from $5,000 going to a charity to over $10,000 or $15,000 going depending on the rake, depending on the final prize and how many contestants you have. We haven't specifically stated in this bill. The Senator Cowdery thought it was best to leave it up to regulations, the Department of Revenue, to kind of decide what the limits on those should be, and naturally those will decide what kind of return for these events will happen. Specifically, this bill does not prohibit tournaments such as a satellite tournament for the World Poker Tour or other things. Obviously, TV coverage goes along with that. There's some certain, notoriety for the state that could come along with that in terms of tourism, other things. But that is all going to depend on the regulations, what those say when they come out from the department. This bill probably gives the department a lot of say or leeway in what they want to do, because this hasn't been done before in the state, and it could be a learning process for the Department of Revenue to some extent.
Other questions? Senator Cowdery?
I noticed in this packet here, they're talking about a World Poker Tour, and the players paying $15,000 for a chance to win $1 million and $1.7 million or something. That is no way connected with what we're trying to do, is it? I mean,
Senator Cowdery, through the chair, that is not specifically dealt with in the bill. That would be left up to the revenue to decide what the maximum is if those tournaments are. That's how tournaments are normally run. To some extent, the satellite tournaments, I believe there's one in Whitehorse for the World Poker Tour. The buy-in is $50, and basically the establishment, whoever wins that tournament, how many people they have, they pay for the buy-in for them to go down south for a regional tournament, then on to Vegas or wherever the World Poker Tournament may be. But specifically, we're leaving that to the Department of Revenue, and this bill doesn't specifically prohibit them from limiting prize outs or even table fees or things like that. That is all left up to the Department of Revenue currently in this bill.
And again, for the record, we have been focused on poker, but there are other kinds of card games and or tournaments, if you will. If I remember earlier in my career here, I believe there were cribbage tournaments that were held at various social clubs, and they were technically in violation of state law, and there were a number of people who felt these were games of skill and were very unhappy that they were technically in violation. So while poker, I think, is the issue of the moment, what other games would be allowed under this legislation?
Thank you for asking, Mr. Chair. Originally, it was the sponsor's intent not to name the games in the bill, to leave out the Department of Revenue. We kind of came to realize that some people would like some assurance as what type of games would be allowed under this statute. So we actually listed them. It's poker, pan, rummy, bridge, and cribbage. That is kind of the group that we had there. That we, from what we've looked at other card rooms, Washington or California, for example, what they consider non-banked games, which leaves us also at Class 2 gaming. So that was the games they came up with. Any game where the house doesn't have a percentage stake in the game besides the rake fee, which would ever be the table rental.
And the would it be up to the regulation again as to the level of the games? And there are some very high stakes games, and then there are some in the vernacular penny ante games. How do you envision,
Mr. Chairman? We specifically addressed in the bill wagers. The department decide what wagers are would be, and subsequently in there, you know, they could decide all, you know, basically no. The wagers is a limited wagering. They could go from $1 to $5. Currently in Washington, I think their low table game is $1 to $4, and they have a 5 to 10, I believe, is where they max out. And that's decided in regulation in Washington, and I vision that the Department of Revenue would do it the same here.
Questions for the bill sponsor?
I'd have a question. I'm kind of concerned about what kind of monies would be made by the people that own the gaming rooms.
Through the chair.
Would they be taking a percentage of the money for their take?
Senator Davis, through the chair. Actually, this bill doesn't address it, but we have a sponsor substitute that we'd hope to bring forward the next chance we get that actually puts in the term rakes, which would be how they determine what kind of money they take, and that would be decided by the department. The department would regulate what those are. When it was originally drafted, it's still believed that the department has regulation over that, how it's drafted. But we're willing to put, the sponsor is willing to put in a definition of that to reassure people that the Department of Revenue can say how much that is, whether it be a dollar or a percentage. It was going to be left up to the department to decide the most effective way to do that.
Is there, I'm sorry, Senator.
I was just going to ask what kind of economic impact would it have, what kind of jobs would this provide?
Senator Davis, through the chair. We're looking at it right now, and if you care to look at the fiscal note, which should be in the back, they took it off an idea of what Washington is, which is about 6.7 employees per table. And if we're looking at a table, their average size is about 15 tables. One establishment is about 15 to 20 tables. I'm thinking here, since it's a limited number of entry, there might be bigger rooms. So you'd say about, say 15. So you'd say close to 100 employers, you know, people. That's table people. So 7.5 people per table that are actually having to do with the games themselves. That's not taking into consideration any food services or beverage services, if that's the case.
Are you familiar with what the rake or the house take is in other areas per game?
Mr. Chairman, I can't speak to that because off the top of my head, I've lost the number in my head. Mr. Perry Green is going to be here to testify, and he has a little more experience with that. So I'll let him testify towards that. But it is a fairly small percentage, but it's based on the size of the game is played.
Saying he has a little more experience in poker would be saying a woman was a little bit pregnant. Okay, other questions for this one? I'd think of one more. Have you considered whether alcohol should be allowed to be served in card rooms?
Mr. Chairman, we haven't put that into the bill, really. The couple people we've talked to said they wouldn't need alcohol to sell this as a establishment. One consideration would be that obviously is the case as it is. Some people were scared that it'd be like a casino, you get free alcohol. Well, our policy in the state as it is right now wouldn't allow that. So it wouldn't be used as an incentive. So the issue of alcohol hasn't been really addressed. If the department wanted to work with that and try to decide how that's done. This bill specifically doesn't prohibit them from putting, you know, deciding those issues with the license itself. But that isn't addressed in this issue. In this bill, we didn't go there.
Other questions for the bill sponsor? We have some folks that would like to testify, so we'll excuse you for the moment. And Brett Bright, is it? Welcome.
I'm going to come in response to questions.
Oh, just for questions. Okay. If we have questions with Department of Revenue, I don't see any at this time. So, well, let's take it back. You've looked at the bill, and one of my personal things is always worried about the state's bottom line and general fund. I think we all acknowledge that there can be some social costs with an expansion of gambling. From your point of view, Department of Revenue, have you got a potential idea of what the fiscal impact would be as far as income to the state and cost to the state?
For the record, my name is Brett Fried. I'm an economist with the Department of Revenue. I think also that Larry Myers, our deputy director, is online here. As for the fiscal impact of the bill, that was very difficult to generate a revenue number. That's why we started the front. And the reason is we don't know how many card rooms would end up in the state or how many tables would end up in those card rooms. What we did was we used the 2000 census to look at how many, what would be the maximum allowable card rooms, because one of the stipulations in the bill is that you look at the population of the municipality and divide it by 30,000 to see how many card rooms would actually be allowed in that municipality. And we came up with 13. And then we used that maximum. And then we used the maximum number of card tables allowed in Washington State per card room, which is 15. Using those two, and as well as we used the 6.7 average number of gaming employees per table to derive an estimate of 2.5 million in the first year, and then 2.1 million in following years.
Thank you, Mr. Myers. You're on off-net. Is there anything you'd like to add? Larry, can you hear us?
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah, hit that mute button again. Okay, now we got you. Is there anything you'd like to add, Mr. Meyer?
Mr. Chairman, no, I'll just stand by for any questions.
Okay, further questions for Department of Revenue? Seeing none, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Green, you've been suggested that you might have some experience in this area.
My name is Perry Green. I'm here as an individual, and for the record, I'd like to answer any questions about it and tell you what's going on in the poker world, the card room world, and any concerns you may have. I think the bill is well written, and there is some things that I would perhaps propose that, but all in all, that's a very stringent bill, and it meets for the operation of a card room. That bill was written as if a person were operating a casino, and this is a very strict, strict bill for a card room, and it's a wonderful way of doing it. I'd just like to say that I'm sure many of you have seen the article about 140 people attend a tournament in the valley where a fishing rod was being given away. And if 140 people were to show up to win a fishing rod, that shows you how much interest there is out there. And people had a good time playing, and it is wonderful to do it. I brought along the latest issue of Poker Player magazine, and in it, of course, it has many of the tournaments that are online, and also it deals with, there's ads in here for taking cruises, and I'd like to just point out an ad in this latest issue. It says, Classic Gaming Cruises, a poker and slot tournament cruise. Guess where that's going to, and you can win $1 million. It's coming to Alaska. So if you think you're stopping gambling, you're not. By not voting for
that's,
this. Now that's
when they're off outside our.
Yes, but it's still within. They come out now. Now let me show you how big tournaments are today. In another port, they had 735 players, and they were awarded $7,207,000 for prize money. That's one prize. Today I called a friend of mine who was in a poker tournament in Bellagio Hotel in Las Vegas, and he got in there for $1,000. He has a chance to win $3 million, and this is going along the country. In golf today, there's about 2,000 playing pros that are playing for the prize money that's out there, and it's around $100 million a year. Poker has blossomed so much that today the prize money in tournaments is around $700 million. We're not even talking about, with Senator Cowdery's bill, we're not talking about this kind of money. But I'm just saying that is what's happening. I'd like to pass this around, if I might.
Mr. Green, Senator Davis had a question about the typical rake. How much would it's standard for the industry, if I can call it that, per game, and then what would that look like?
I would recommend that you follow the California law of the poker rooms down there, and it would be like $3 or $4 per game to host it, because you have to. It takes four people to run one table, and then if there's a no limit game,
could you expand on four people? I know there must be a dealer.
Okay. All right. Well, you have to have a dealer. You have to have security. You have to have janitors. You have to have relief people. You have to have floor supervisors. You have to have people that cash people in the cashier cage, and you have to have standbys. You have to have maintenance people. You have to have brush people. You have to have people on call. It generally takes about four employees for one table.
I just wanted to follow that a little further. So it's $4 per game. And then how many games per hour and how long it would be a typical day of operation?
In talking to a friend of mine who owns a card room who owns two card rooms in the Seattle area, the card rooms generally take in about $90 per hour per table.
And they
gross.
And they run 5 hours, 10 hours.
They can run 24 hours a day, or they can run 12. It depends. Games start and break up and start again.
But it averages about $90 an hour.
Yeah, when they are in operation. But your expenses go on. As I was flying into Juneau, I noticed the Alaska Airlines in-flight magazine, and I also thought I would bring it because on page 13, the lead article, which has been in the Wall Street Journal and magazines all over, is about know when to hold them. And I'd like to pass that around and familiarize yourself with it. I further brought with me a new publication because of the popularity of Poker Today. We have a new magazine that has just come out, and it's called Bluff. And the cover of it is they're starting poker leagues, professional poker leagues. Now, we're not talking about professional poker here in Alaska, nor are we talking about leagues. We're just talking about facilitating. And it says big time poker hits NBC, because as you all are aware, it's all over the airways. And if you'd like, take a look at that. Now, this is a wonderful thing, too. It shows a poker player. Her name is Jennifer Harmon, a lady. One of the wonderful things in popularity about poker, you know, they can say that you get real equality when you have a poker table. I'd like to answer any questions.
No longer a hideout for men, apparently.
Not in the least. The women are pretty tough.
Well, questions for Mr. Green?
Mr. Chairman.
And Senator Davis.
You know, Senator Collery said something about a flyer talking about all the money that could be made playing poker in the game rooms. And did you have that in your hand that you were holding up?
This one?
When you asked the question of your staff that these kind of games wouldn't take place in Alaska, I saw a flyer just saying that they were having those kind of games right here now.
Oh, they have.
And paying big money.
Underground games in Anchorage. I've been in Anchorage 50 years or 55 years. I haven't been to an underground game maybe in 30 years. But I think any night you can go in Anchorage and find an underground game, 15 underground games. It's unregulated and everything. That's a fact. And I think it's a recreational game. And even my wife has caught on to it. I went down there after session. She was watching the World Poker Tour on her television. So I think it's just a popular thing. And the reason I want this was the fact is there's so much being done anyway, us at least gets a few bucks out of it, and a lot of people, it's a legal environment, their safety, I think that they would prefer to go, and nobody's forcing anybody to come to the games, you know. So.
Senator Davis, I think I know what she might be referring to. I was home about on April 3rd and 4th, and I came across a flyer of a poker tournament with a $500 buy-in, and first place got so much, second place got so much, third place, call such and such a number, and you can play. And this goes on with regularity. And in Anchorage, in after-hour places, there's as many as I've been to places where there's actually three tables in one place.
Senator Cowdery, I'm sorry, were you finished, Senator Dave?
I'm done.
Yeah. Senator Cowdery, online gambling, and you mentioned television, is a growing phenomena, and even though it's illegal here in Alaska for the House to charge to provide gambling, apparently online gambling is legal here in Alaska because it's headquartered somewhere else. Is that the case?
I think most of the online games are offshore. If I have never played for money online. I've played just for scores. So.
Yeah.
I could ask Mr.
Mr. Green.
Yes, we could take about 90% of the online poker goes to Costa Rica, Dominican Republic. It goes to London, and it goes to some of the tax haven places. That $7,200,000 tournament was out of Aruba.
And Senator Cowdery, on page 16, there's a section on convicted felons. I'm just wondering if you could speak to that.
Well, before anybody could get a license, it was my hope that they would have to be cleared of any felon or any crimes in their past. Just to try to keep this above board to be run by individuals or people who were above board and citizens that just wanted a, they get, you know, I think everybody gambles at golf. I don't play golf. I don't deprive it, but I think there's been a bet, a wager or two on golf and tennis and pool and every all kinds of games. So I just thought anybody that's going to open one of these establishments should be pretty up-and-coming people, if not convicted felons and things like that.
Mr. Green?
I would just say that the online sites charge $3. I know of in games where you're playing for money, they have no brick and mortar. By brick and mortar, you know, they don't have a plant, a facility. That's all they have is a computer line. And I noticed that when PokerStars dealt their 1 billionth hand, 1 billionth hand, they gave away $100,000, whether you were playing for 5 and 10 cents or you're playing for $1,000 or $10,000.
Make it up in volume, apparently.
Oh, they are just coining money, and good luck to them.
Other questions for the bill sponsor or Mr. Green? I did hear, I think, that your staff said that there was a CS you're working on?
Yes.
Okay, well, I look forward to seeing the CS and address this issue again at a further future hearing. Unless there's someone else that would like to testify here in Juneau, at this time we will close testimony and wait for the CS. All right. For Thursday, thank you for testimony. For Thursday, would you check the hearing notices? We don't have an agenda at this time. We're awaiting the 24-hour rule, so we're not sure where we'll be at as far as that. And if we have nothing more to come before the committee, thanks to all. We'll stand adjourned.